Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. I'm John Martin.
And I'm Dean Riverman.
All right, Dean, last week we had our beefs.
Yes.
This week we're back to biting.
Yes.
Tech bites, that is.
Yes.
For anyone who has not seen one of these installments over the years, this is our typical roundup of interesting news articles, lists, conversation starters.
Yes.
Stuff, you know, you can take to the water cooler.
More of that stuff.
Networking event.
Yeah, as I look at mine, not a lot of tech on this one.
No, I know. It was the same here. I was kind of like,
I feel bad now that I'm looking at my list.
These progressively aren't really like technology related. But again, we spend so much time talking about tech with our tech connecting and everything.
We need to loosen the collar and just talk about other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just fun stuff we just feel like we want to talk about and share.
Fair enough.
Hopefully you guys get something enjoyable out of it.
There you go. Yes.
This week we're talking about the Sheconomy.
Yes.
The coolest streets in the world. Americans sleeping less. You know, kind of a no duh there. new airline cancellation and fee rules.
Yeah.
How much soda is too much?
Yes.
And what's going on with non-compete clauses?
Nice.
So we got some
good serious stuff in there too.
Yeah. Exactly. There's some serious stuff.
Serious?
There's some fun.
Bro, hold on. I got to wake up.
We'll get some shots of 5-hour energy between here.
Don't hit the snooze.
So in the spirit of that, you know, while we prepare ourselves mentally and physically for this, we'll throw it to those credits like we always do. It's time to plug in and get connected.
Welcome to the Tech Connect Podcast. It's time to get connected.
Let's see. Let's start off here. Okay.
Yes.
So as I mentioned, this is our great way of sharing some interesting topics and articles. Dean, you sent some fun stuff over to me. I sent some fun stuff your way.
Yes.
I'm going to let you kick it off here. Let's talk about the Sheconomy.
So that was a term that I didn't even know existed.
Did you know this existed? It feels like an easy term to make, but I'm surprised I'd never heard of this before.
So for clarity, it's SHE-economy, like her or like she.
Yeah.
Like, right. And that's what intrigued me about it. I'm like, the Sheconomy? What's going on here? So when you break it down, and I'll just read kind of why it matters from this particular article, which is an Axios one, and you know, good stuff. And I like the way they read or they write their articles from time to time. So anyway, why it matters? This trend is more evident that the Sheconomy. Economic growth attributed to women and marked by Barbie, Beyonce's Renaissance tour, and Taylor Swift's last year continues to expand. So I guess it's around this concept that, you know, to be a woman-owned business or, you know, it's kind of it right now, right? Like there's a lot of growth happening.
But that women are drivers in the economy.
Absolutely.
Just as much as men are, yeah.
And that is growing. You know, like, and so they kind of dove in, they zoomed in and zoomed out, which I love in certain areas. You know, so women are opening more businesses traditionally dominated by men, such as plumbing, HVAC repair, things of that nature. So when you look at these, what they call home services categories created by women grew 38% in 2023 over 2022. So that's kind of non-traditional, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you hear all these stories like, oh, you know, women aren't getting in it. They wouldn't be plumbers or they wouldn't be HVAC technicians or something. Well, they're opening businesses in that at a greater rate than men, I suppose. So, you know, and I don't know what the commentary is on that, but we'll just keep going down the line here. Growth in women created hospitality and travel businesses, including vacation rentals, things of that nature, grew. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to go back to that whole concept around the Barbie, Beyonce, Renaissance, Taylor Swift, and maybe get your comments on this. You know, this so between the lines, what they're saying is the post-pandemic economy laid the groundwork for, another phrase, Swiftonomics, which is the economic turbocharge that Taylor Swift's tour brought to each city that she performed in, right? So we all heard those stories.
Right.
Like if you had Taylor stop by your place, economic boom.
Yeah.
And that happened in Cincinnati, right? And they quantified it. It was like tens of millions of dollars.
Because you're filling up hotels. You're people that are going out and dining, that are shopping.
So what they attributed is the rise of hybrid work means that more folks are willing to travel out of town to see Swift and book longer stays per the recent note from Moody's Analytics report that they did.
So
I thought that was it. I'll give you one more. traveling to Taylor Swift concerts is much easier when you can work from your hotel room, right? The constraints of workers are taken away, and at least partially, that was the commentary. So what do you think about that? You know, I was like, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
I was, again, the she economy is one thing. I get that. I get the economics around that. Right. Okay, women own businesses, things of that nature. But what this is making the argument is that, you know, directly now related to Swiftonomics, you know, it's like it's the new world that we're living in that is actually enabling a lot of this to occur.
Right, right.
Interesting. So,
to me, this feels like this just feels like the world, the economy, business catching up to what was already out there, which is
I see
that what more than half of the world's population identifies as women,
yes,
and would
and
that they do buy things, they income, they have buying power.
This is like opening businesses, but go ahead.
That's the other part of it too, also that women, you know, are interested in being entrepreneurs and opening businesses and embracing leadership roles in business too. To me, it's like kind of like, all right, well, we're just acknowledging something that we should have been acknowledging for a long time anyway. But what I always find funny about this, and related to like the Taylor Swift and Beyonce and the Barbie of it all, is every few years, I feel like, or maybe like sometimes even once a year anymore, there's always that thing that everyone suddenly goes, well, huh, women do enjoy this thing and will buy and show up or do these things. And a lot of times it's around entertainment stuff, like movies, for instance. You know, everyone's always like, you know, like when Bridesmaids came out and it was like, I think it was like the highest grossing R-rated comedy of all time at that point or something when it came out for briefly at that point. Girls Trip, some of these other things, you know, and these events that are supposed to be for women, supposedly, women show up and get excited and are interested in partaking in this stuff. And it was one of those things because Hollywood for a long time was like, well, a giant big blockbuster that we release in the summer has to be for 18 to 45 year old men. Right?
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah.
Like it's got to be geared for them because they're the ones.
Transformers.
Right. Exactly.
Superheroes. Yes.
Exactly. And yet realizing, and then they'll put one of these movies out and go like, well, huh, women will do show up and sell out theaters too. But then they seem to forget the lesson. And then a couple years later, a Barbie comes out.
So you think this is like a cyclical thing?
Kind of.
I didn't take that read on this at all. No, I was more focused in on the fact that they're actually opening businesses, which I think is great.
And
that's clearly a trend. But I was then trying to connect the dot back to the whole Swiftonomics, and that was a little bit of a puzzling nuance to this to me.
Well, maybe it's just
because
the idea.
I think you're arguing the argument you just made makes sense in the Swiftonomics. You know, course. You know, yes, women are an economic power. Of course, you know.
Oh, and by the way, all these things are stuff that men can appreciate and like too. You know, like
for sure,
you can go see those movies that star women. And
for sure,
go to the Taylor Swift concerts.
I haven't
seen
Barbie
yet,
though.
Barbie's pretty good.
Have you seen Barbie?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. I didn't get a chance to see it in the theater, but I saw it when it came out on Max. It's good. Right.
Well, anyway, not to sidebar, but anyway.
We can talk about that offline. To your point, though, I think there is that underlying better story, which is about the idea that women are opening more of their own businesses. They're branching into, you know, economic areas and into, you know, workspaces that have been traditionally male, to your point.
Yep.
And if you are going to tie it back in some way to the Swiftonomics or whatever, it's maybe just the idea that, like, hey, Taylor herself is someone who has made a very strong and powerful brand for herself.
Maybe there's the connection, right? Just empowering women to say,
exactly,
you can go out and do this. You got this, bro, to put it in,
Maybe you're not going to be a world-class singer who, you know, sells billions and billions of records.
But you can go out and
exactly.
Okay,
there's nothing stopping you from opening your own agency.
Now, that
business
makes a lot of sense to me. So, and again, the data that came out of this particular article, which was also interesting, these are listings on Yelp, which, you know, that's a curious source to use for your analytics.
We've come across a few lists that have done that. I'm always like, it's weird, but maybe it's
but that's
kind of
cool.
You know,
so this refers to, you know, changes in new business listings on Yelp. And so some of these categories are, so again, hotels, travel, a lot more women owned, just almost double what the national average is that were women owned. Home services, which a couple of these, I wish they were a little bit more defined, you know, home services, local services. Don't know exactly what that is. Education. Well, education was a big one, too. The only one that really is dramatically below would be automotive services.
Right,
which I don't know. I don't know what the commentary there is. I mean,
I guess still plumbing, traditionally male
HVAC.
But I mean, maybe it's just because, I don't know, you know, men tend to be more into cars than women are typically.
I guess they, right?
In a general kind of sense. But yeah.
Men are from Mars, women are from Venus in the sense of cars. Maybe that's going to apply there. So anyway, it was just a neat little article. Yeah. You know, I was not aware of the term she economy, but I get it now to a certain degree, and kudos. You know,
well, hopefully, hopefully the bigger point is here is that people don't dismiss women as being potential business leaders in whatever field they feel like getting into.
Yeah, it's just yet another.
But you don't go, but that's not something women do. Like, that's, come on.
That's another indicator, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I do have a worry about all this, but I'm going to get to this in my third note.
Oh, is this the sleeping one?
The sleeping
one. Okay. Yes, all right. All right. Yes. Yeah. I can see where your connection might
be. Well, just because of what that article comes out.
I got
but anyway,
you.
Go.
All right.
Yeah, so what you got?
If you recall, you had one of these Tech Bites, I don't know how long back it's been, about the most Instagrammable streets in the world, the place where people like to take the most pictures.
Yes.
Well, I came across another list about the coolest streets in the world.
Oh.
So unlike that list, this one looks at cool streets to hang out on, like where they have fun places to drink, eat, explore.
Okay. I was about to ask, what makes a street cool?
Yeah. And this, mind you, this is not one where there was like, you know, an extensive, background, explanation for this. They weren't ranking it on any particular metrics or whatever.
I see.
But they basically were just like, hey, these are just places that have awesome, cool places to just hang out. They tend to be very walkable. They were talking about, in this article that there's a lot of urban, areas that are intentionally trying to turn some streets and areas into more pedestrian and like either completely eliminating vehicles from driving through or limiting, the reasons that vehicles would need to go through those areas and keeping it much more inclined for pedestrians. So I scanned through the list. I will say, unfortunately, there is not a single one of these streets that I have actually visited. Did you happen to see any that you had been to? And granted, this is for all over the world. So there's, the number one, for instance, was High Street in Melbourne, which never heard of this before. Yeah, wasn't aware.
Exactly.
It sounds like a pretty cool place, and they got some cool stuff there.
Yeah,
I think the first U.S. one is East 11th in Austin.
Nope, never been there. I've been to 6th Street on Austin, but not East 11th.
Well, there you go.
I'm scrolling through. There was one on here that I had been to. Go ahead.
The only one I wasn't sure about is like there was one in Chicago. I was like, have I been to that one? Because I've been over a lot of Chicago, but I don't.
Oh, 18th Street on Chicago. Yeah. No.
Did not recognize.
I think
that
it's the one in Miami. Yeah, the Miracle Mile.
Okay.
I've been on that before.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, but I don't have a lot of commentary on this one. Just
I do.
This is a cool, interesting.
So
list.
Here's my commentary. None of the U.S. streets look cool. I mean, if you look at the pictures. Europe has just the charm level is off the charts.
If you go to any of the European ones,
I immediately want to go visit them just based on the picture alone. I mean, look at Barcelona. Oh my God, it looks so cool. Paris,
you got a very good point.
I mean, even Tokyo, these pictures, you go to like, look at the one for LA. It looks like Skid Row. Like, no, I don't want to go to LA. That street does not look cool.
Oh, man.
I'm sorry. Do you agree with my assessment
here? I do
agree.
Like, I think it's
just
like,
these particular
it's almost
pictures.
Like, did you just choose a bad picture for this?
Right?
Because I read the one for LA, and I'm like, oh, this sounds kind of cool.
Look
like,
at
they
that.
Got this, they got this cool.
No.
They got a cool cocktail bar called Death & Company. Like, there's
not
like,
in the picture, bro. Look at that. That picture is like,
I know.
I mean,
picture,
you're just like.
The picture looks like it could be any street.
They just swept the tents.
Any
off of
street
there.
America.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Exactly. But you compare that to like Gerrard Street in London.
It looks
perfectly quaint. That's exactly the kind of streetscape that I would want to go down.
I will push back on one of them here. The one they give for Bangkok, Bontog Thong in Bangkok, just looks like a barred up like shop front at dark.
Yeah, right.
I don't even I'm like, what? Like,
that's fair.
I guess part of the problem here is clearly they didn't get good pictures. I feel like this is. Someone just, decided to make this article and just did some Googling for pictures,
Well, in all seriousness.
Or grabbed whatever the Google Street
View
image
was. This does give me a little bit of a bucket list, hey, if I'm going to go visit any of these wonderful places and it is global, it's like, okay, well now, for example, if I'm ever blessed to go to Barcelona again, I'm going to go visit this street. I forget what it was, but anyway, the one on there, that would
Consul Descent.
There you go.
There you go, yeah.
Even their names are cooler than ours.
If you check this article,
18th Street, 3rd Street.
Yeah, they're giving them cool names, and we're just like, street. But I will say, if you check out this list, each one of these also tells you like where to eat and what to drink and what to do on each.
Yes.
Like one place to eat, drink, and what to do while you're on that street. Yep. So I thought that was kind of
cool. That is kind of cool. So anyway,
so there you go. Check it out. As always, we always have links to all these articles in our show notes. Check out the 30 coolest streets of the world. Tell us if you've been to any of them. I'm curious if anyone's got some experience. It may be a better picture that we can send into timeout.com to spruce up some of this article a little bit. All right, Dean, what do you got next year?
This is it's around, the article is around sleep and stress, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Sleep is kind of important, don't you think?
It's kind of important. Human fundamentals.
Clearly, we're not getting enough. So here's the headline. For the first time in Gallup polling since 2001, a majority of U.S. adults, 57%, said they would feel better if they got more sleep, while 42% say they get as much sleep as they need. So, clearly there is, when you look at some of the charts and you look at some of the data on this particular article, man, there's just not enough people getting enough sleep, period. And then connecting it to where I was, you know, they really kind of homed in on women.
Yep.
And women 18 to 49, if you're in that category, your stress level is up and your sleep is down. And so I don't know what the commentary is, but you know, on our society, but it's having a marketed impact, you know, starting in like, I'd say the 2010 to 2013, you know, right around there.
Right.
You start seeing that effect. But anyway, here, one of the things I wanted to comb out, because they have been doing this report for quite some time. In 1942, what percentage of people do you think got 8 or more hours of sleep? This was very surprising to me.
It was to me, too. And then I thought about it. So, first of all, give the percentage here.
It's 60% of the people got 8 hours or more in 1942.
So, my reasoning behind that is, what was there to do in 1942 to keep you up late anyway? Like, do we even have TV yet?
But that's part of the commentary, right? So now we have all this disruptive.
That's what I'm saying. We didn't have, like,
at bedtime.
There's social media.
That's an excellent point.
There's, you know,
I mean, the sun goes down in 1942. I would say there's still a lot of people who don't have power. You know,
yeah, yeah.
Potentially, right?
Exactly.
Or whatever. And so, yeah, the sun goes down. What are you going to do? Yeah, I'm going to bed.
Just going to bed. Yeah.
I'm, you know, or I'm reading a book. And that's going to put me to sleep.
Exactly.
Because if you're like me, you get about a page and a half in and you're asleep. Yeah.
It was 3% said 5 hours or less, which contrasting to 20% say they get 5 hours or less now.
That's right.
33% said 6 to 7 hours compared to 53% now.
Yep.
And then, 59% said 8 or more hours.
Compared to only 26% now. Today.
And mind you, we're even if you go back to 1990, which is the next lowest, it was 27% then.
Yeah.
Like the highest it looks like it's been anytime recently was 34% in 2013.
Yeah. Now, I know we've talked about sleep because Marco obviously fits in the 26% getting 8 hours or more, which is why he's such a pleasant person daily with no stress.
Like the rest of us. You almost managed to say that without breaking.
I did. I know, right? almost. But the other comb out that I'll have here is that, you know, again, getting back to women, the poll finds that 36% of women versus 48% of men said they are getting the sleep they need. So it's fairly dramatic. And I like the fact that they had both stress and sleep in this particular analysis, because I do think that they are complementary or what cause. I don't know if it's causality, but I guess they're making the argument that it is.
Like, right.
You know, the increase in stress is leading to less sleep. And so, you know, when you think about that, though, you know, the women who are 18 to 49, I think, is the category. Think about all the things that society is asking that group of folks to do as compared to 1942.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there you may have a child. So you're a mom, you're a daughter, you're a business owner now that we just talked about in the she economy.
Full-time,
it's like all this stuff. Well, no wonder they're the most stressful part of our particular society right now. And so now that leaves a lingering question mark. Is that right? Fair? Is that what we really wanted to get at all this? I don't know.
Yeah.
All this being, where we're at
men
today.
Men go out and do your part. Give them an extra half hour. You can lose a half hour. It's fine. You know,
right? Like, spread the stress.
Exactly. Spread the stress, you know?
Or is it that we're just trying to get too much accomplished in the day?
I think it's probably
a combination of those things.
Yeah.
Like when you think about it, and I don't want to get too philosophical here, but you know, like I can remember growing up that a dual income family was new. Like, right. And there was an acronym for it, a DINK. A dual income, no kids.
Right.
Family. I can remember when the first DINK family moved in next door to us.
Right.
And my dad was like commenting. I'm like, well, you know, they don't have any kids. It's dual income. And they don't have any kids. I'm like, well, what? For whatever reason, that stuck with me.
Right.
So we've built this, but there's no more there is right. where I'm at. Like, okay, so women have made all these economic gains and all this good stuff. And it's contributed to family income. But now we've hit, where else can we go?
Right.
You know, you got both people working their tails off now. And it's leading to more stress, less sleep, blah, blah, blah. Where else can we? I don't know.
Yeah.
To me, it's a commentary that we're all trying to do too much.
Yeah.
But anyway.
No, I agree. I think there's that's a big part of it. And I think when it comes to the women part, it could also be that, again, we've finally started making a little bit more space and a little bit more room for women to do more and be more and have more economic opportunities and more opportunities to be in the workplace. I mean, again, you go, you know, like you said, you know, just growing up, it was unusual sometimes to encounter someone where both parents actually worked, you know.
Absolutely.
And I think we've reached that point where it's a hell of a lot more common. In fact, even probably I'd say
it's
the most common.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 100% it is.
But unfortunately, I think the backside of that is that what was expected of women in their responsibilities pre-expectations that they were working also has very little changed.
Didn't go away.
Not much of that has changed. The overwhelming burden of childcare, for instance,
for sure,
is still typically on women
Absolutely.
Versus men.
Yeah.
And I think that's where a lot of this then starts happening. It's like, all right, well, here's this.
No doubt.
Because let's be honest, people will joke about it sometimes, but it is honestly true that a full-time mother is its own kind of job within itself. You know, like it's, you know.
Not a maybe, it is.
Not a maybe.
If you ask me.
Yes, it very much is.
Yeah.
And then you add an actual full-time real job
again,
I'm going to put in quotes real job. Again, that wasn't, but, you know, a professional job or whatever,
right.
a career type job on top of that. And basically saying like, hey, so basically you're doing two full-time jobs sort of at the same time.
That's right.
And then meanwhile, you know, sometimes the men are just like, well, I'm just still just doing the full-time job and nothing really changed for me. I'm just doing what I've always done. So yes, it's just, I think this is one of those things where there's some obvious disproportionality going on here. And again, hopefully we could, as men, start doing a little better about pulling some of that burden back in.
Agreed. And I think that is happening.
That
I'm
it
just
is,
curious
yes.
to when all of that gets expended. Like, you know.
Right.
Even the shared burden of raising a family.
Even doing that, it still doesn't mean it's going to be easy.
It's compiling all this stress into our lives that it's like, I don't know that it's all worth it. You know, at the end of the road, I don't know. So,
and then you get into the economic factors of it. And that, again,
for sure.
The reason why you have to have a dual income family, because like, hey, if you want to buy a house, if you want to, you know,
oh my gosh.
Afford any kind of luxuries
don't
in life.
Don't even get me started on
that.
You
basically are going to have to do that.
Yeah. But anyway, back to this one. So sleeping. Sleeping's important at the end of the
road. It really is.
So try to find a little bit more sleep if you possibly can.
Yeah, no doubt. How about you? Where do you fall? Like, do you feel like you get an adequate amount of sleep at night?
Well, it depends on the day.
Yeah.
I can't say like every day. And I always look forward to the weekends, but I never get more sleep on the weekends for whatever reason. I mean, I get a solid 7.5 every day.
Yeah.
So, but that's just, in general, I feel like I get enough sleep.
Yeah, I feel like I typically am in the 7. I got a bad night, maybe like 6, 6.5 or something.
Oh, yeah, I'll have nights where
but I try to shoot for, you know, for 7 and feel at least somewhat refreshed when I get up the next day. So I will say today was one of those days the alarm went off and I was like, what happened? Like, where did my night go? It's like, I felt, it's one of those, have you ever had this one of those nights where you felt like you slept super hard?
Yes.
But then the alarm goes off and you're like, well, I didn't sleep at all, did I? And yet you also know that you slept hard. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway,
sleep is a funny thing.
It very much is.
All right. So airline cancellation.
Let's talk about airlines.
Oh, I don't know where you're going to land on this, but go ahead.
So, you know, most people have found air travel to become exhausting and frustrating in ones of millions of different ways. I was just talking with Marco and Josh earlier in the studio here about my debacles trying to get
back from DC,
get across the country and back or whatever, a few weeks back. So there's been some new rules have been handed down by the Biden administration, through the Department of Transportation?
Oh, yeah.
About basically changing up the way airlines respond to cancellations.
Yes.
And also the fees that they like to shove into airfare.
Yes. Right.
And essentially, we got two major things that are going on here that they've requested in the rules they put out there. One on the fee side is more transparency for any kind of extra or those junk fees, they call them, that are so that they're very clearly defined what those fees are, what they're for, and why you're paying them. And then the other being when a flight is delayed more than a certain amount of time. I don't remember what the actual hour number amount was, or flat out canceled, as well as major delays to baggage, or if you have an in-flight amenity like Wi-Fi that you paid for but didn't get access to, or was bad access or something, that they're going to be required to give automatic cash refunds. So not only like not giving you just a travel voucher, or not something where you're going to have to call them up and haggle with them, or you know, get on a chat or whatever and haggle with somebody, but they will be automatic within a certain amount of time that they are required to give you cash refunds for these particular issues.
Okay.
At the moment, this, you know, and obviously this could get tangled up in legal stuff, you know, it's potentially at some point, but right now the rules are expected to take effect anywhere between 6 months to 2 years to implement and get them underway. But I'm curious your thoughts on this. I know people are probably thinking like, well, isn't this mean the airlines are just going to raise their prices, or they're going to be, you know, is there going to be some kind of backlash about this? Personally, I'm on board. I think, you know, the fee thing, like, yes, there should be transparency. Like, there should never be a fee you get charged for that you're not told exactly what it's for.
Agreed
with
that.
Why it exists.
Yeah.
The refunds and stuff, I'm okay with that to some extent, too. I actually, the part of it that I'm most okay with is don't make me haggle. Don't make me have to get on a phone or get on a chat and spend like 4 hours on hold or something just so I can get you to agree to give me something back because you messed up my flights, you know?
I hear you. Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
Well, in general, I'm not a regulation guy. I don't like big government. You know, like this feels big government to me. And, you know, like trying to use the invisible arm of things to dictate what companies do or do not do. Right. So in general, I'm not a huge fan of that. Yes, I like the transparency on the fees. Should they be doing that? Of course they should be doing it. Nobody likes, you know, getting hoodwinked on that. Do they need a law around it? I don't know. Maybe. I'm also a market guy, right? And I didn't know the other issues were a problem. Meaning, like if my flight got canceled, I would assume that I'm getting that money back. I didn't know that I would have to. If there's really haggling going on because of that, okay, well then that's an issue.
Right.
But I don't know. You know,
some of them only give you travel vouchers. Like some of them will be
that's
like,
fair.
Like you can only get a voucher to fly with us within 6 months' time or something like that. In this case, it'd be like, no, you get your money back. You go and do whatever you want with that money. You're not required to fly with us again. Mm-hmm. You don't have a time limit that you can use that money.
See, as a marketer, I would see that as being like, that's something that I should have found out if I was XYZ airline, and use that as a message to why you should fly with us.
I agree.
Let the market make that decision rather than government now making these nudges and telling companies. So that's just my general disposition. But
I will agree with you on the point that the businesses themselves are the ones that should be doing the right thing here.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, sometimes we also know that you give businesses the opportunity to do the right thing and they will choose to do the wrong thing.
Sure.
And I feel like, unfortunately, I feel like in the airline business, that is especially true because while there is competition, there's not enough competition sometimes.
That's where the problem becomes. The only unique thing here is that you can't step away from one airline and hop onto another flight to get to where you want to go just because they screwed you over. Yep.
And again, I've experienced that where like, you know, you get screwed over and you're like, well, I'm stuck. Like I'm stuck here. I can't do anything. It's either I don't get to go where I want to go today, or I put up with and deal with whatever the airline's shoving at me in order to do it.
But there's so much nuance here. Let's just drill in a little bit on the cancellation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it was a cancellation due to maintenance. Okay, there I can see, the airline's at fault. I should get my money back, cash, not a voucher. But it was due to weather? Well, you know how complex those decisions are about do we fly, do we not fly, do we delay, do we not delay? Now the government's making that decision on what regulate, you know, what fits as a right proper cancellation. I don't know. To me, that gets gummy, right? Like, how are you making that determination? There's just a lot of variables when it comes to that. So anyway, yes, I agree with the concept that it should be cash back rather than vouchers. That feels a little bit better, right?
Yes, like,
I would say the general public is, they're buying tickets based on cost, right? And they're probably going with the least expensive way that I can get my family down to wherever, Orlando for vacation. And if it doesn't turn out, I want my money back. I don't, you know, it's not that I want to go on XYZ airline.
Exactly.
I just happened to
like,
pick
what
that.
If it's an airline that you picked because you got the best fare and they only fly to one or two places and you're like, I'm never going to need to use this airline again.
Yep.
This voucher is pointless to me now at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. So. But again, you know, as a marketer, I'd be like, hey, we'll give you your actual money back kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And that's a differentiator.
Yeah. I completely agree. And maybe that's what this will inspire. Maybe it will inspire more of them to be like, hey, I'm not going to let the regulations part decide what we do here. We're just going to change our business model to
see, this is
compensate.
Connecting this back to an earlier conversation you and I had about like social media.
Right.
This would have been the perfect place for social media to shame these, you know, type of airlines into, hey, give us our money back, dude. Not
but here's
flight
the thing.
Vouchers.
The thing is, that has been going on for a long time,
and like, they're still not happening.
You can go on.
So you think
media.
That's why the big hand of the government's
going to
come in?
You can find entire accounts that are devoted to like trashing a specific airline for all the
and
things
they don't
they've
care.
Done wrong, and they're just like, whatevs. Someone's going to get on that plane and
well,
take that
seat. Well, then
shame
on them, right?
Whether it's you or not, we don't care.
Yeah. So maybe the threat of this kind of regulation should have been. I don't know, man. So. It's a tough call, but at the end
we'll
of the road,
see what happens when those changes.
I do like getting my money back.
Yeah, me too. Especially when I didn't get to do something that I paid for. Yeah.
That's right.
All right, Dean. Let's talk about sodas, man. Because this one, this is one that I looked at initially, and I was like, man, this kind of upsets me. But then I also looked at it further, and I was like, I'm not sure that I buy into this either. But go on. Let's hear about this one.
Well, it was. Now
that I've sneak previewed my thoughts.
Okay.
There.
So do you drink soda though?
I do. I'm typically. So
now are you drinking diet or regular?
I'm usually drinking the zero calorie.
Well, then you're fine. This does not apply to you.
But yet I've heard people have told me those are awful too.
Well, you can make a separate argument about that, but I don't know. Look, in my youth, I drank a lot of soda. I mean, you know, back when I worked in the pizzeria,
oh yeah,
that's all I drank. Yeah. I mean, how did I stay hydrated? Pepsi.
Right. Yeah. Someone handed you water and you're like, pfft.
But now
that garbage
as I get older, I'm a little bit more, I don't drink cola. I mean, like literally maybe four times a year.
Oh, wow.
Coke. Like a can of Coke. Now,
mind you, I'm also, we've talked about this before. I'm not a coffee guy.
No, right.
So my source of caffeine is typically going to be a soda.
So let me give you the rundown. Basically what this article says is that workouts are rendered worthless by soda consumption, scientists warn. Drinking just two cans of 12-ounce pop per week can effectively erase the heart health gains made by during exercise, which they quantify as being 150 minutes every week, right? That's like the general quota, workout quota that people should be doing is 150 minutes every week of walking or whatever.
Right.
And so let's just say walking. You walk 150 minutes a week. Just two cans of pop kills that. And so what I liked about this article is I'm the type of person that needs like really rememberable stats that'll just sink in. And to me, that was when I read that. I'm like, dang, just two cans of pop kills all your workout for a particular week. And that, so that's the only thing that I got out of this. It's like, it is that, you know, because of course I've got a daughter now. Hi, Tori, who's growing up. She's in a point in her
life.
Does
she really listen? Come on.
She doesn't. She's in a point in her life. Maybe later in her life she will. But she's in a point in her life where like sugar doesn't matter to her, right? It's like,
oh, yeah.
She's 12 years old.
Yeah,
it's
we don't
like,
give a crap.
Oh, no. And I keep telling, now I give her like, we joke about it. Like, you know, sugar is poison. You're literally ingesting poison. She's like, whatever, Dad, it tastes good, as she should, right?
Yes.
But, you know, she's at an age where she can, I guess, you know, two cans of Coke, she's got the metabolism.
Oh,
yeah. It would be fine.
It's probably
for that.
Burning
anyway,
out before it even reaches her stomach, practically.
100% right. Yes, exactly. But anyway, so I was just struck by just two cans, wipes it all out. Yeah. There you go. And this is sugar. These are sugar. So, you know, they're trying to get people to get off the sugar-based cane syrup-based sodas.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's my first caveat there, because this article, when you actually manage to read this article between all the pop-ups
pictures. It's a clickbaity article.
And I'm not even going to, because this particular outlet is one that is notorious for this kind of stuff. And
100%.
And notorious for articles with, you know, dubious at best proclamations.
Yes.
So when I was digging through and reading this, I was like, okay, well, it took me a minute to realize, like, okay, they're talking about the sugar sweetened stuff, which
they are.
Then doesn't necessarily count the zero calories. Not that I'm, you know, giving myself an excuse, but, and I'm also like, well, I typically do maybe one or two a day, but again, it's always the zero calorie stuff. Like, I gave up. My only difference is sometimes if I go to fast food or something, I get a Because the diet stuff.
We'll call it the leaded
version.
Yeah, the
zero calorie diet stuff always tastes terrible in fast food for some reason. They can't get
it. Oh, you don't like it off the fountain?
No.
Oh, I see.
But the regular stuff obviously is good.
Yes.
But that's a pretty rarity for me too.
Yep.
So I'm like, all right, well, I'm like, I feel a little better about that at least because, yes, drinking full calorie, full sugar sodas is, we've known those aren't good for you. The whole idea of it being two a week is it will undo all of your exercise. My biggest thing with this is they threw in this thing and they said it was something from some pharmacologist in Quebec City.
No, University of Laval. So this is not like,
okay, I know,
it's not
still,
a rinky dink university.
There's no
100,000 adults.
There are no links to this study.
Oh, I see.
Like this is just bad journalism.
Are they that bad? I should have run from this article is what you're saying?
Kind of.
That's how bad this news organization, I'm using air quotes, is?
It can't be, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then let's move on.
I'm just saying I'm not a fan of their particular brand of journalism.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's just me. I don't want to get sued for libel or anything here or whatever. But you know, again, this article it didn't link out to this study.
No,
and I didn't do my diligence to go looking for it this morning either.
You like, yes.
So I'm like, all right. I'm like, maybe again, maybe there's something there. But I'm also like, how did they get this kind of? Plus, somebody even noted in the comments, they're like, how do you do this kind of research? They said. Data from approximately 100,000 adults over 30 years.
Uh-huh.
Like, what? How did you do this study? Like, did you have a control group?
You want the exact. Okay, yeah. Got it.
This is not too sugary of a story. Yeah, this is me not defending. Exactly. I'm not defending the sugar sodas because I do think they can be very
That's
bad
fair.
For you.
That's
and
fair.
We all will do better drinking a lot more water in our life. But... this whole thing just made me go,
well,
like,
see, here
some,
I am.
There's some stuff missing.
I'm just a dumb dude, you know, two cans, wipes out a week.
Hey, you know what,
that's
though?
What sunk in.
If it makes you drink less soda or feel justified in your drinking less soda, great, because you're not doing anything wrong. You're doing something that's good and healthy for you.
Hey, thanks, bro.
So
yeah, I appreciate
maybe
that.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe there I should is. Be harping on this. If someone reads this and goes, like, man, I got to cut back, and
no,
you do.
I'm with you. Now
and
I'm,
you feel better and you
I'm,
lose weight.
I'm
great,
embarrassed because I see all the holes in this argument. Like, where is the study? Who are these 100,000 people? How did you do this?
Show classic. Me the data. Yeah.
Show me the data. All right, well, maybe you got some data on yours. I don't know.
All right. I'm going to finish up here with another interesting, a federal rule that was thrown out in the past week or so, which is an end to non-compete agreements for most employees.
Interesting.
So this was a ruling that was sent down by the FTC. They estimate it will affect roughly 30 million people that are in, non-compete agreements. I believe this still would, the potentially non-competes would still apply to some high-level executives in some industries. Mm-hmm. But in general, a lot of people will no longer be bound by those particular agreements.
Mm.
And kind of the rationale behind it, they came up with this rule, was that initially those kind of rules were made for high-level execs where they didn't want them taking proprietary information,
sure. yep.
contacts,
yep.
business over somewhere else
yep.
and stealing something away from their business, which on that level, hey, I get it. That would suck, if you're your big boss or someone high up in your company takes all the most important info to you and runs to your competitor with it. I get that. But unfortunately, a lot of these non-competes have started trickling down over the years to hourly employees, people in low-level positions that just don't have access to anything that would be in any way damaging to a company, and kind of being treated almost as like a retention strategy to keep people from jumping around within a particular industry. And I think for me, when I looked at this, like why I think this is a good thing on that level is because, let's be honest, finding a new job is harder than ever. Mm-hmm. Like, I can think from my experience, of just, between my last few jobs, even and all times that I've switched jobs, I've switched industries entirely. But it's so hard to do that as it is because it's hard to convince someone like, hey, even though I'm not part of your industry, you should hire me in. So for a lot of people, being able to jump within their same industry can be the easiest way to get a new job when you can bring skills that are already applicable from yours to another. But if you're under a non-compete telling you like, hey, sorry, you can't go work for another company within this industry, even though that's where all of your knowledge and skill set and you'd be best suited. And they also note in the article, too, like that's oftentimes where people can get the most, traction, like to move up to either get a better job or a higher paying job is by moving to somewhere else within the same industry.
Yep.
And this has just been capping and making it hard for people to do that. So I personally think this is not a bad thing because I think the non-compete had kind of become weaponized in a way that it shouldn't have been. And they also mentioned that some places would use it as a as a tool to lure people in and be like, hey, you can have your higher salary and your more perks if you sign this non-compete that you'll stick with us for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And I guess I get that. Mm-hmm. But and the thing is, you could do that still with like a, you could do like a contract of some sort or whatever that mm-hmm. doesn't necessarily have to have the non-compete where you're telling them they're not allowed to mm-hmm. to go to anything remotely related or not. But I'm curious your thoughts on this. Do you feel like this was a good thing to get rid of these?
So my initial reaction to it was not favorable, but I did not realize that non-competes were getting down into workers making $20 or less an hour.
Yeah.
Come like, on. What are we doing?
What are they going to do to your company exactly. if they go over to your competitor?
So to like, me, that it seems ridiculous.
Yeah.
So if I was working at the pizzeria and I had to sign a non-compete to I can't go to another pizzeria. No. What?
Sorry, you can't go from Domino's to Pizza Hut.
The
you
risk,
might take a trade secret.
The risk
with you.
To the company is so minimal. Right. And it's like, that was really perplexing. So I didn't realize that non-competes had gotten that far down. And I struggle with non-competes in general because, right. you know, I get it from the business ownership standpoint. Yes. Okay, you know, you don't want your executives leaving, taking their Rolodex, taking, it could generally, right. genuinely harm the business.
Yes. I get that too.
But to your point, I think that can be addressed via a contract, you right. know, rather than a non-compete clause or something like that. I definitely think it's more applicable, but you can also make the argument that, hey, just because you're the VP or whatever at an XYZ company doesn't mean you don't face the same challenges that you know, any worker would have
yeah.
of being
yeah.
able to leave and go and get higher pay somewhere else
yeah,
or something
exactly.
like that. Like, right? If you're the vice president of sales at a smaller company and you're saying you can't non-compete to a larger company where you might make more,
right.
you know, that's a problem
yeah.
from a worker standpoint. So This one's kind of hard, but when
like
I
said,
read
some of that regulation, you don't like necessarily, but
I don't in general, I don't. But like I said, I'll just freely admit that I still struggle with it, even at the quote unquote executive
right.
level. Right. But I do think it can be handled by contracts. But the fact that it was getting down to 1 in 10 workers earning $20 or less an yeah. hour,
that's absurd.
We're getting covered by non-competes. What?
Yeah.
Why? I get it, but. Man, that feels a little icky,
yeah.
you know, in
yeah,
the sense
it
that it's like, okay, I think we've gotten a little bit over our skis here.
We've done a little too much there.
It yeah. also did comment in here that some of the states, you know, not to go the state route, but, you know, I do like the fact that states should have some autonomy here. There are 3 states that completely ban non-competes,
yep.
you know, outright. So, you know, do you leave it up to the states or do you come down with an FTC mandate like this that is a federal mandate? Don't know.
Right.
You know, generally I like states having some autonomy there. But anyway, you know, if it's left in place, it really should just be at the executive level. We shouldn't.
Exactly. You know. Yeah. And to your point again, maybe there's a better way you could frame this and build it into someone's contract rather than like a straight up like, hey, you simply are not allowed ever to work in this industry ever again if you decide to leave here. So
yeah, obviously it's not. We need some lawyers in here.
Yes,
right?
Well, that's yeah. that they've already said like they expect legal challenges.
I'm
know,
sure there will
this,
be.
And there, you know,
because
the,
there is well, a strong
the
argument on the
comment,
other side.
The Chamber of Commerce has already like you know been on the been
oh,
on the attack
sure.
over this one. So
yeah, yeah.
And again, I see multiple points of view of this. I think as a whole, this is probably good because of the fact that people that simply should not be under these at all were getting affected by it. But I can also understand why, hey, you know, maybe we figure out what something is new and different that we can do instead in order to prevent, you know, those kind of, you know, they were talking about how like, you know, California is one of those states that's just a bit eliminated completely.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they also cite that as like a part of the reason why the tech economy has boomed so much because mm-hmm. people were able to leave it. You know, let's say you're working at a Google
yep.
and you have a great idea for a startup
mm-hmm.
that, you know, that you can go out to and build and creating a whole new market and you know, a new innovation mm-hmm. and growing the technology and taking us in a whole new direction,
yep.
that person maybe could not have been able to do that if they were under non-compete, telling them they were not allowed to create
right.
their own business.
Or they'd have to
space.
Wait. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a lot of non-competes sunset after a year.
Right.
Or something like that. Well, a year in you know, new economies like that,
exactly.
that's forever.
You could be missing out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone else has taken your idea and run with
that's
it.
That's right.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So interesting stuff. We'll see where that goes. I have a feeling we're definitely not.
Leave the
done
pizza worker alone. Don't give him a sign him on compete. Come on, bro.
If someone wants to work at McDonald's and Wendy's and Arby's, let him do it. It's fine.
Absolutely.
It's no big deal. Yeah, you know? Really. Like maybe they'll help you, you know, flip the burgers a little better even. Who knows? All right. That's our Tech Bites for today. So some interesting articles there. Again, go check out the show notes if you want to read further on some of these.
Yes.
And as always, we want to hear from you. If you have some your own ideas about these topics, you're like, hey, I agree with you guys. I disagree. You're idiots. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, tell us. Just let us know. We like, you know, we like some feedback, constructive criticism.
Yeah.
We'll take it. As always, you can find us in a multitude of places. First of all, if you have ideas for the show, if you have Tech Bite topics and articles that you want us to cover on the show, send those to us anytime. There's always a link in the show notes where you can drop ideas to us. We'll send you a Tech Connect podcast t-shirt if you do that.
Yeah, Marco, is that t-shirt up and running yet?
Yeah, we haven't. I don't think we've started printing it. I need to bug Angie about that to get him.
Got it.
To get him in
Marco's
the
not to blame. Marco did his part.
This is on me now.
Got
so,
it. Okay, got
know,
it.
I apologize for that. Yeah. But we're working on that. They'll be coming out soon. Also, you can always reach out to us. You can find us on LinkedIn, Blue Stars LinkedIn. We're always recapping the show there every week. Feel free to leave comments there. And of course, you can always email us anytime, techconnect@bluestarinc.com. All right, Dean, let's wrap things up here, as always, with what's tech connecting with you?
I actually have a techie one.
Okay, let's hear it. I like hearing, I sort of do too in its own way.
But so in order to do this one, I'm going to need your most popular password that you use. Okay, if you're not willing to give me your password.
Password 123.
Tell me if it's, is it numbers and letters?
Typically, yes.
Is it numbers, letters, and characters?
Yes.
Typically. Is it numbers, letters, characters, and a symbol?
The character is the symbol to me, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant numbers, letters, yes. Okay. You're right. Yeah, you're right. It is. Okay, so you said yes to that.
Yeah.
And then do you use uppercase, lowercase?
Typically, yes. Yes.
And then just give me the total number of characters in your typical password.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably ranges from 8 to 12, maybe? I don't know.
Okay, all right. So I'm going to give you the 8. So here's the headline.
Okay.
How long would it take a hacker to brute force your password?
Okay.
And what brute force means is, you know, obviously just putting resources. Putting 12 RTX 4090 graphic cards against your password so that they can run all these scenarios that. So you just told me 8. That have numbers, uppercase, lowercase, the letters and symbols, that would take a hacker 7 years.
Okay.
To hack. Now, if you are the poor soul.
I try to change them once every few years, too. So,
I'm with you. Yeah. But it's interesting. We'll put this link in here because it gives you a little chart. And it gives you, number of characters, 4 to 18. And then it gives you all those variables. Are you numbers only? Are you using lowercase letters? Are you using upper and lowercase letters? And then it gives you how long it would take a hacker to do that. So if you are just using 4 numbers only, hackers could do it instantly.
Yeah,
brute force. Yeah. Hack your password. So
you can run those permutations quickly. Yeah.
Even if you're just using 6 numbers, instantly. Yeah. Because a lot of them make you at least go up to 6 characters at this point. But even if you're using 6 characters, but you use numbers, upper and lowercase letters, and symbols, 6, well, it only take them 12 hours to break that. So that I was like, because I think I use some of my older passwords that are still lingering around there are that. It's just 6 characters. And so it's like 12 hours. Now, the one I currently use is 12 total characters, all of the above, numbers, uppercase, lowercase.
Right.
That would take, hackers approximately 164 million years.
Okay, that's not bad. That's good, yeah.
To hack that.
I don't think they're going to waste a lot of time on that.
Right? So I just thought that was kind of fascinating when you break it down to how fast can they, using those resources, hack
that makes
me
feel a little
stuff.
Better, because I'm fairly meticulous about my passwords anyway. Like,
yep.
I have my own process for how I come up with them, and honestly, I'm also someone who almost never uses the same password twice.
Oh, okay. See, I'm the opposite, unfortunately.
Which makes things... Can make things a little difficult sometimes.
Between your bank, between whatever, your newsletter.
Especially anything that's
super
important.
You have different passwords for everything?
I do.
Wow, you are the bomb. Yeah, that's like
it makes things a little complex.
IT
sometimes,
people love
but,
you. Yeah, well, yeah. Right. So, where do you store all this?
You
not to give
hold,
up your.
Yeah,
your
say,
own, is there a safe box somewhere?
I have my ways.
Put
it that way.
Got it.
So, but yeah, let's just say if you got a hold of one of my passwords, you're highly unlikely to get into anything else with that same
Dang.
Password.
How about you, Marco? Are you a one password guy, or do you use multiple passwords across? Oh, he's a multiple guy too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only have like a few in rotation. I feel like I got to up my game and get a unique password to every unique entity.
And everybody keeps telling me to start using these password managers, and I guess that's what I really should do. Which I do that sometimes. I've become pretty fond of doing that, like on Google Chrome, like letting them kind of take my.
I was about to go there. Do you let the browser? You know,
not for everything, but I do let that happen.
Well, I'm definitely accused of that because then, you know, if I change my password, oh my gosh, yeah. Well, like Netflix, for example. You know, like,
right.
Because the kids use it, well, back before they started hammering down on all that. Yeah. So, I mean, when you have kids that like to share some of your accounts using air quotes, you got to go with the simple stuff that everybody's going to kind of remember within the family.
Yep. That's
anyway, so hackers might
okay,
like me.
Okay, so.
But I still don't fit in any of these instant hackable.
But I do think you're above, and honestly, you're hard pressed to find a site that doesn't make you put in.
And some of the comments on this article really hit the nail on the head too. And they're all around. They all say like, bro, you can do more than three guesses, you know, in a try or something like that.
Right, you know,
how many people actually brute force passwords today, assuming it doesn't take you out of three attempts, you know, right? Because if you fail after whatever. So anyway.
Yeah.
All right. So what's tech connecting with you?
All right. So we were all familiar with like, you know, Google Maps and how you can do like Street View or you can actually see the live photo of it. And of course, in most urban areas, like, you know, there's like a car that might drive around and take those pictures so you can see all your Street View. Well, sometimes you go to some parts of the world, though, they actually have to send out physical photographers because there may be, you know, isn't places for vehicles to go.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
This is an awesome article that came across. I came across from Malta Daily. And it's about a photo bombing dog. So this is a small island off of South Korea called Jukdo. I may be pronouncing that entirely wrong.
All right.
Nice tranquil island that an unexpected star, it says, has emerged on Google Maps. Maru the Golden Retriever. He shows up in over 1,000 of their Street View shots.
Really? The same dog?
Yes. He's become the beloved tour guide of this picturesque locale. And basically, what happened is there was a photographer was sent to the island to take pictures.
Okay.
And pull all this stuff for the site. When they did, this dog, Maru, which is apparently extremely friendly, loves meeting new people and guests, basically was like, well, I'm chilling and hanging with you today. Like,
You seem
like you're cool.
So the photographer didn't bring the dog.
Right. No.
So
the dog just started following them around and as they were taking all of their pictures and shows up in most of the shots. It says, Maru, with his friendly disposition, acted as the perfect guide, even patiently waiting for the camera person if they momentarily strayed in the woods. So apparently this dog's well known. It's been, you know, to the inhabitants for 7 years now. He's always nice to everyone who crosses their path. And apparently, like, someone on Reddit happened to come across, you know, that happened to be exploring this island on Google Maps and saw this dog there and shared it. So now it's become this big story.
I'll be darned. There you go.
Maru, the photobombing Google Maps dog on the island of Jukdo. So it's something just funny.
How do we spell that island?
J-U-K-D-O.
Okay, there you go.
So Jukdo. There you go. So, you know, check it out. Maybe you'll find a new place that you want to visit. If nothing else, you get to see some fun pictures of a cute dog hanging out. So I think that's awesome.
That's awesome.
Good, because you know how it is. Like, people always like find interesting Google Street stuff.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, check out this what this person was doing when the camera happened to roll by. This one's very fun and cute.
Well, no, usually for whatever reason, I get sucked into the conspiracy ones. Like, where they'll zoom in and what is this?
What's happening in that window?
Do you see the alien city here? It's like, well, no, I don't actually see it. So I'd like to see a dog.
Yeah, there you go.
There you
That'd
go.
Be much right. better.
So. Fair enough.
All right, that's What's Tech Connecting with Us. Those are our techs we're biting and chewing on today.
Yes.
Again, send us your ideas. We want to hear from you. So, you know, until next time, we got to unplug, but go out, support some women-owned businesses.
There you go.
Walk a coolest street in the world and tell us, you know, what you got out of it. I mean, if you want to invite us along and pay for everything,
that'd be
too,
that's
great. Nice, Tech Connect podcast on the road. Like,
oh, yeah.
We're determined to check out all 30 streets.
For sure.
Yeah,
I like it.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Mark, you'd be down for that too, right, man?
Oh, he'd be
bring your camera along, man.
No doubt.
Yeah. And as always, folks, please stay connected. Tech Connect podcast is also brought to you by Elo. at the 70 series full HD professional grade touch monitors.
Nice.
Professional.
70 inch?
70 inch.
I love it.
Look at a 70 inch professional grade monitor. Whatever. I wouldn't have room for that. If you want to exact put it in there, my wife will look at me like, really?
What are we doing here?
Do we need this?
Yeah.
I need to watch the Reds games on like a giant screen. Sure.
And Miles can do Mario Kart.
Yeah.
By touching the screen.
Exactly. Yeah. The 70 series delivers professional grade feature rich platforms well suited for POS, interactive digital signage, self-service, document signing, and much more. All right, let's get into some of those features.
Yes.
I love talking features.
Yes.
A narrow border touch screen.
Ooh, nice.
Energy Star 8.0 certified. Mm-hmm. You know, energy conscious.
Absolutely.
Scratch resistant surface.
Ooh, even
durable
better.
IK07 design. Low blue light and flicker free. Mm-hmm. Touch on screen display. Display tilt from 20 to 70 degrees. Built in speakers and a collapsible stand for Visa mounting.
Nice.
So this is available in 22, 24, and more recently 27 inch sizes. Black or white housings. 70 series delivers the quality and reliability you expect from Elo, backed with their standard 3-year warranty, extendable to 5 years with optional advanced unit replacement. So check out the link in the show notes to learn more about these monitors. Tech Connect Podcast is brought to you by Intel. Purchasing decisions, they're no longer based on solely on the best tech specs available on the market.
Nope.
It's just not a good idea to do that at this point.
You need more than that.
Hopefully that's not what you're trying to do.
Right.
As customers continue to think more holistically about their business, a transactional sales approach focusing solely on specific components and SKUs results in missed opportunities for everyone. When this current market, discovering the why behind a customer ask helps sellers become empathetic business partners more effective at delivering value to their customers. The Intel Workshop in a Box Sales Academy is a comprehensive package of assets geared toward an adaptive and solution-oriented selling approach.
Yes.
Workshop in a Box of materials build on existing sales practices and provide tools for continued practice and implementation of the techniques learned.
Mm.
Now, Workshop in a Box offers the train the trainer tools, a timeline of pre- and post-workshop activities, and a well-coordinated session designed to fit the needs of your company and sales team. Intel Sales Academy launches soon, but if you're interested, contact the Blue Star Intel team to learn more.